matters relating to ex-mine workers union. What am I saying now? On matters relating to ex-mine workers, finitum. I don't have to go further. Having been established by Parliament, it is investigating, actually referred to as DMG, further down there, and also we've got, what are the people who are coming just to observe proceedings? They are called observers, observers from Labour and Chamber. I'm putting them together. For far right, we've got Dr. Baka from Chamber, and we've got Sonim Baka from Labour, Chamber and Labour. I don't know what's going to happen here, and we've got Noom here also. If we can start with you, say, on my immediate right, just to introduce yourself, and we go further down. Thanks.
To introduce myself as the first guest, Shane Shushane from Labour Union of Mine Workers Media Unit.
Good day, my name is Mzwachan Shapa. I'm from National Union of Mine Workers in Health and Safety.
My name is Peter Bailey, and I'm a shop steward in the NUM. Good day, my name is Fred Bona. I'm the parliamentary coordinator in NUM. Thank you.
My name is Nicaragua. I have the legal lead of the NUM.
I've already introduced you. If you want your voice to be heard, you can introduce yourself, Sonia and Dr. Bak.
Okay.
We'll have to give our guests that opportunity so that they can brief us as the committee on issues relating to their invite. I'm sure it was stated in the invite that you need to come and brief this part of committee on the issues relating to ex-mine workers, and thereafter, after your presentation or after your briefing, members will have to interact with the briefing, and then we take it from there. Thank you very much. I don't know who is the leader of the delegation. Wherever you will be starting, the ball is in your court. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. From the outset, let us apologize to you that we will not be making a written presentation to this committee. However, whatever information that we shall exchange with the honorable members here can be followed in writing from ourselves. The reason being that we have requested for postponement because we knew that we were going to be addressing the Portfolio Committee on Minerals and Energy regarding the accidents and fatalities in the mines. And most of our preparatory work went into that. But then your secretary convinced us that indeed postponement is not possible because you have got time frames. You must give reports and your own recommendations of what you have gathered. So it is in that regard, Chairperson, that we would profusely apologize that we have no handouts that we would give. And secondly, Honorable Chairperson, our understanding of the matter before you is that we need to share our experience in as far as ex-mine workers are concerned. And the assumption we make is that there are groupings that have formed themselves into some form of organizations, some in the Eastern Cape, some in the KwaZulu-Natal. And among those people are people who have worked in the industry, and some of them have been our members, and some have been shop stewards within NEM.
If you will just hold it on the comrade. Members, I think the delegation is asking to make a verbal presentation to you, which will later be followed by a written submission. What's your take on that? Is that acceptable?
I think, Shepherd, we have a record here. It is my recording, whatever the speakers will be saying. So we can accept it and also wait for a written response also.
Thank you very much. I didn't want you to proceed, Comrade Fred Kona, without that being administratively agreed on. You may proceed then.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As we indicated, that there are these groupings, and our understanding is that they have laid a complaint with the Parliament and about lack of compensation or some claims that are not being paid out to them as a result of them sustaining some injuries and also some monies that allegedly were transferred to the then Transkei government. What we would want to sketch out first and foremost is that as an organization, we have a constitution. Just to briefly, without taking you through the entire constitution, we have provisions within the constitution that relate to the eligibility of members. In the main, we organize workers who are active workers in the mining industry, in the energy industry, as well as in the construction industry. And indeed, those the members do pay dues to the union. And then we then service them, render the service that is then required in terms of that constitution and other policies that the union decides upon. And in instances where members are faced with problems of sustaining injuries, in workplaces, loss of their limbs, and eventually some of them being killed as a result of their occupation, we also do assist them in forms of raising the conditions under which they are working. We also participate in the investigations in as far as those accidents are concerned. And then recommendations would be drawn out of those processes, which will then be passed on to relative authorities, either if there is a call for a legislative framework or if there are actions that must be taken by the employers or even actions that must be taken by government. And one of the components in terms of these accidents, occupational diseases as well as the deaths, there's an element of compensation to those workers that shall have suffered. We then assist them in as far as ensuring that the industry they are working in would lodge the necessary claims with the department that is responsible for compensation. In this instance, some compensation is paid out by the Department of Health, and some is paid out by the Department of Labor. As a union, we do not administer any funds. We are not even a conduit between the employee concerned and the compensating authority concerned. These payments would be direct from the institution to the member or to the family members of the person that shall have deceased. No money that comes to the National Union of Mine Workers. Suffice to say this, that in situations where we have participated in supporting our members in submitting lawsuits against corporations, the best we do is to assist with the corporation in setting up a trust fund which will be independent from the National Union of Mine Workers, independent from the concerned employer, and being a neutral body that will then administer the claims and also the payouts according to its own criteria that it shall have set up. The shining example in this instance is our support of our members, ex-members, in claiming compensation against multinationals who were involved in the asbestos mining in the mining industry. These cases have gone as far as to the London Courts of Laws, where decisions have been taken and the rulings were made that indeed these workers can claim against these multinationals. So such funds, between ourselves, the legal representatives, the multinational corporations, a trust fund has been created, which is called Asbestos Relief Trust. And there, only our role is our participation at the trustee level, just to ensure that indeed, in terms of procedures that shall have been worked out by that trust, monies are paid out to the deserving and qualifying workers and ex-workers and families of members who have passed away. We're raising this, Honorable Chairperson and the members, to clarify the fact that the National Union of Mine Workers does not handle compensation monies for workers. I think my colleagues will also expatiate on other procedures that get followed in as far as the departments are concerned. But suffice to say that our role is that of playing an assistant function towards our members when they lodge these claims. Now, the matter before this house arose some time ago when some of the ex-shop stewards had this belief that there are certain compensation monies that were due to them which were not paid by the mining industry. And indeed, they knocked in a number of doors. We know it because some of the people, as we said, were our former shop stewards. And one of those is Mr. Nomazel from the Eastern Cape. And they knocked in a number of doors from the Eastern Cape government through to the presidency when they organized a sit-in kind of an arrangement in the union buildings, where they transported quite a number of, you know, ex-workers and widows of workers who have passed away, or some children of workers who have passed away, so that they could then occupy the union building grounds to raise the plight of these ex-mine workers. And the last we knew was that then state intervened in the situation, and eventually when these leaders abandoned those poor, widows and children, then government then intervened also at our behest, to ensure that at least those people are transported back to their places of origin. Because our feeling was that they were drawn into a situation where there are no clear answers and there are no direct, you know, legal challenges to anybody in as far as these demands are concerned. But we never wanted to get directly involved as a union because we didn't want to be seen to be obstructing or undermining their rights as citizens of the country in terms of taking whatever action against whomever they feel has aggrieved them in whatever manner. But then when we intervened, it was at the stage when we realized that these poor people are being abandoned and leaders left them in the union building grounds, and then they were moved to a hall, they were evicted from that hall, and the situation became uncontrollable and it was becoming more frustrating for those people and indeed becoming more violent in its nature. And then indeed then government, as we said, intervened and assisted in transporting those people back. Then in terms of these interactions, we have not appeared in the picture at all. We don't know what agreements they have with what institution, with what authority. We don't know what demands are they putting across. Because when they came back to NUM as ex-miners, we explained to them that those who qualify for occupational injuries, by all means, we assist. As I made an example about this case. Already now we're busy with, you know, working as far as the silicosis, you know, area is concerned. And also we are handling cases of people who have died in service. We're pursuing that in assistance to the families of those ex-workers. So where we are unable to trace, because a number of these people also were not even our members, we are unable to take any kind of an action towards their assistance. And therefore, as a result, some of these ex-shop stewards felt that they have requisite, you know, experience and knowledge that they would then organize these people and then take up, you know, their fight against the industry in the main. That's our understanding of what the problem is all about. And as we have indicated, the Honorable Chairperson, we tried to avoid interference at all costs because we didn't want to be seen as obstructionists in the pursuit of these demands by these groupings, who by any measure have not consulted NUM and got either the support or the go-ahead from NUM to basically go the routes that they have taken. But then we acknowledge that they are South African citizens. They have a right to associate and disassociate. Therefore, it's on those bases that our interaction and our role in this whole situation is so limited to that extent that we have explained. Maybe my colleagues will then add on that even despite that, there are some interactions with the chamber in terms of looking at the plight of those people in general, those who have been retrenched. I think Comrade Bailey, next to me, will share that information with the committee to say this, that we didn't restrict ourselves to those frustrations, but we look beyond what those groupings are doing. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Comrade Gona. Any additions?
Thank you, Chairperson. Like Comrade Fred has said earlier, there has been intervention made by the NUM. Together with the Chamber of Mines, we have signed an agreement on how we're going to deal with the plight of the ex-mine workers. But that is more in terms of our social responsibility, setting up a clinic and looking at how we can provide them with proper health care systems. And we're moving from province to province in terms of the agreement that we have. At the later stage, the agreement is that at the later stage that the parties can then engage once we've identified the magnitude of the problem. We can engage in terms of setting up of a trust and stuff like that. It would be either through engagement or it would be through litigation if the parties do not reach consensus in terms of the engagement. And as the NUM, we are more than willing to take up this fight to ensure that they get adequate compensation. But one must be also mindful and raise this as an area of concern, is that Nomazela is misleading the people. It is more about what they can get out of this whole process and in the appointment of being trustees or whatever the case may be. The compensation that they have promised to the people is not a reality. Some of them, yes, do qualify in terms of the statutory processes for compensation, but others have long been compensated. And that matter has already been dealt with. It's more a question of for any future compensation that they are gearing themselves so that they can be in control of those funds. Whenever there's an agreement or an agreement is struck between either the NUM and the chamber in terms of additional compensation, I don't think we would allow a situation where the expectations would be met that they would sit on that board, because it would be an undertaking between the two parties, which is the Chamber of Mines, the National Union of Mine Workers. If we bring somebody on board, it would definitely be the Department of Minerals and Energy and nobody else. So the expectation that they're going to sit on that trust is an expectation that is a pipe dream at this stage. That's basically what we can report, Shepherdson, on the issue of the plight of the Eastern, the ex-mine workers. We are highly conscious of the fact that they are going through a difficult time, that there's a lot of suffering taking place, but there's also great room for exploitation and maneuvering. We are fully aware of that. And that's why we've embarked on this process and trying to expedite the process to try to its final conclusion so that people don't get used. The situation that they are in is not exploited to the benefit of those seeking to get their hands dirty and stealing from them. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. You'll realize that I'm not limiting you in terms of time because of the centrality and the sensitivity of this matter. But I wouldn't be saying that we're doing well on time. Is there any other thing that you would want to add on before members interact with the presentation? Okay. If you are done, members, there it is. On the basis of the information you have, here is a presentation from the National Union of Mine Workers. Please interact with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, NUM, for the presentation that you have made. My question is on the S members. How long do they remain your members as NUM people? Thank you.
Another one? Thank you, Jim, and I think it's on the same vein. I wanted to find out whether these mine workers were ever members of the union. And if so, if they were, what actions did you do when they were disabled or contracted any illness? What happened there?
Another one?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to welcome the person from... No, I want to understand, because when we received previous presentations, and when we asked you about the issue of membership of these organizations, of ex-mine workers, we asked very clearly about NUM. And then the response will say, if you are not a mine worker, therefore you cannot belong to NUM. You know, so So when your contract with the mining company has ended, it means also your contract with NUM ends. So that gives legitimacy to these organizations to exist and look after the plight of ex-mining workers. So what is the relationship and the take of NUM in that particular argument in order to assist Parliament in terms of legitimacy of these organizations? Two. Okay, it's one person. Okay.
I did not. But one thing, one needs to expand on the three questions that these members have started with. By way of saying, at which point is a member of NUM? Is it when I decide to sign up with SEBA? Or is it when I get to the mines? Or is it when you sign me up that I become a member? There's a simplicity in what I'm saying, but I need the context, you know. At what stage do these people, your members, become your members? And at which stage do they become not your members? With immediate effect. At which point? Because that is where we need to begin this whole thing at, so that we know that at a certain point you dump your membership. At a particular point you take up your members into your role book. I think I was just expanding on those three questions that were asked earlier on. Can we hang on and give them a chance to answer those, and then we take it further with your second one, Mukongi, and then Sibanyoni will follow with another one.
Chairperson, the question is, the answer is going to be short. In terms of the constitution of the NUM, you become a member when you sign up. The day when I sign you up, immediately when I sign you up, the responsible, we don't place the responsibility of the first stop order on the person that joins the NUM. Once you are in our books, we take that responsibility, but in all fairness to the NUM, you are actually only entitled to benefits once your first deduction has been through. But we don't concentrate on that as an organization, because we understand that the exploitation takes place, because we may sign you up on the first and the deduction will only go off at the end of the month. Once you are in the books, you are immediately a member.
Which is when?
Immediately when you sign up. When you are joining. Because if you work in the mine,
okay,
you are not automatically a member of the NUM. You need to be recruited into the NUM. So once you are recruited and you have signed the stop order, then you become a member. Okay. Then secondly, we don't have a limitation. The constitution is quite clear. On resignation, you lose your membership immediately. If you get, there's a rider that says, provided you get work in the industry within 3 months, in the same industry. Then there's a dismissal part. If you get dismissed in the being a member of the NUM, and your case goes on in terms of the statutory structure of dispute, you'll remain a member. Even if it takes you a period of up to 4 years where we go to the labor court, you will still remain a member of the NUM, as long as we have your case, that we are handling your case. Now, there are times when, and what have we done in relation to the fact that people get exposed to occupational diseases, and where were we at the point of that? See, the unfortunate thing of silicosis is that the harsh reality of any occupational disease, you don't detect it at the point of departure. You don't. People may resign, people may get dismissed for other reasons. It could be that the employer has known that this person has been exposed and therefore they make the environment unbearable for him, or they dismiss him, or he resigns. It may be, because we don't have access to their medical records. Once people leave the industry, it is only at a later stage that we find out, but we have this crisis that is looming, like we did with asbestos, then we take on the fight. We have taken on this fight long before of silicosis, long before these committees were established. We've been engaging the chamber in relation to that. But what we cannot do is we cannot prevent people from establishing committees in a community or in society and then say to them, no, we have veto right over these people. We can't do that. We must allow them to run their processes. Our responsibility is to look at for future exposure, and because the current mine workers are the future ex-mine workers, so therefore we prepare a conducive environment so that those that have been affected, those that may be affected, and those that will be affected, we then cater for them in terms of our thinking.
Okay, just to get my satisfaction, at which point do I become a non-member of a, how do I put it? At which point does my membership expire? At which point I would want to get that point?
Well, Honorable Chairperson, as Comrade Bailey has explained, there are instances where you resign voluntarily from the union, and there are instances where you lose your employment. Because I think, let's go back to the reason why trade unions exist. Trade unions exist because primarily they are, it's workers who organize themselves into a body so that with a, through a collective voice, can raise their demands with the employer. So that's the primary responsibility of the trade union the movement, let alone the other, you know, matters, including the political issues that unions take up. But primarily, a trade union is an association of workers, to then have a collective voice against the employer. Now, once a person moves out of the industry, loses the employment, then that person ceases to be a member of the union. But then within our constitution, we've got a grace period of 3 months that if you have left this mine house or this mining company, and within 3 months you find employment, you continue with your membership. We don't terminate you from the books of the organization. The reason why we have that 3 months is because you have categories. You have got members who are in good standing. That means it's a member who pays his or her dues continuously every month. They are subscriptions. And members not in good standing are members who are behind in terms of their subscription dues within the organization. And there's a limit of how long can you fall behind within your dues. And in answering your question directly is that once you do not work in the industry, you cease to be an active member of the union. But then once there are problems that would arise in as far as your occupational, you know, health is concerned, the union does not say to you when you come back, no, sorry, you are no longer paying the dues, therefore we cannot assist you. It does take up, you know, the matters. Particularly when it analyzes and discovers that indeed we can trace your occupational situation back to the employer within the mining industry. So we then assist, you know, people. So within a bracketed code, you can say members of the union don't necessarily cease to be members because of a situation where in future they may have, you know, problems and come back to the union and the union system, but they don't become active members in a form of taking, of participating in the meetings of the unions, in the structural meetings of the unions, because they've got no employment place that they work in.
Which means, therefore, in the context of this matter, you have a record of the people that you are talking about. Because you understand that it might, in a longer period, revert back to a situation where these people are crying diseases, insofar as the occupational diseases are concerned. You have a record of the people that we're talking about.
It's easy to track whether they were in the industry. It's quite easy because there's records at the industry, there would be records at the NUM offices as well. But depending on if they were members of the NUM at the time of working in the industry.
Thank you very much. There it is, members. I was trying to open it up for you to, so that you can get in. Oh, I give it to you and you give it to your friend. Okay, take your bite and yes. He will come the second time.
Okay, thank you. We had a presentation from Department of Labor and Department of Health, and who stated to us that insofar as these ex-mine workers are concerned, their case was attended to and there was a sum of 54 million rand, and then that payments were made out, and then until a balance of something like 20 million rand remained. But what was more striking was that both Department of Health and Department of Labor were saying, if cases are still coming forward and people can show or they can prove that their ailments are related to they being former mine workers, they will still be compensated for that. Now, it gives you an impression that it would appear that they do not have a problem, because if they can prove, if they can show that they contracted those diseases while they were working in mines, then they will be accordingly compensated. I want to find out what is your response insofar as it is concerned. And also, maybe my second one will be, in your understanding, what is their main concern? Is it the compensation for diseases that they contracted while working on mines? Or if you look at some of their documents, it speaks about a strike in 1987, where people were requested to go on strike and some money paid by NUM, which didn't reach the beneficiaries and the like. What is your understanding of their case, their concern, their complaint?
Kongi and then Mama.
Okay. No, I think my second question that I was going to have was related to the issue of former membership and the former members of NUM. Whether in this process of the, what you call, of the database that these organizations they are having of their membership and affected people, do you think that you have a sizable number of your former membership there in those organizations, and what could be that number? Of that. But I want to still just one in relation to membership. You have raised an issue which I think maybe is not part of this discussion, but an issue that people, they become behind in terms of subscriptions of NUM. What will make them behind if you get that maybe directly from an employer? The second question will be the decade of the 1987 strike. I think it's very important. because there are a number of issues that are being raised in relation to that strike that made people to lose their jobs, to leave the places of work, and so forth. And that these workers were not looked after in relation to that particular question. And then the third, which is related to the 1987 strikes, are the conflicts that have been taking place in hostels that made people to move without documentation, without many things, the belongings, you see. And these workers were untraceable, and moreover, they were part and parcel of maybe the database of the chamber or the database of NUM. So has there been follow-ups to trace about these people that could be having these problems today? Thank you.
Chairperson, my question was partly covered, but to expand it a bit was also on the 1987 strike, where a strike is related to the workers. How long do they still remain your people, your members after they were dismissed from work as a matter of the strike? Like they were claiming here that people were taken away, they were bussed away in order to favor the strike. Some went to Lesotho, some went to other parts of the country. And those people were never called back again to come and work, and yet NUM promised them that they were going to call them back to come and work. How is that working?
Okay, your turn now.
Jefferson, let me start by saying, I think it's important that one emphasizes this. The 1987 strike was part of a struggle to transform the industry. Now, there were many casualties in the 1987 strike, even in many strikes prior to the industry's 87 strike. Somebody that would be able to answer these questions better would be the industry, because if there was a strike, people went on strike. Many of them lost their jobs in the industry. In terms of busing people out there, it was never the NUM never bussed people anywhere. It was the industry that bussed people in and out, because they were the ones that were seeking employment, and as they went for them to get employed in the industry, they would transport them to and from. Now, the NUM also never got money from either the Chamber of Mines or from a mine on behalf of people. We have never been a financial institution or a consultancy process.
For our understanding, when you talk about the industry, who are you talking about?
The mining industry.
No, no.
The employer. No. We're talking about the
employer. About the employer.
Oh, okay.
No. You talk about the employer.
Yes.
But you are referring to different mines, or you are referring to a specific... Can't we be specific here?
We're talking about the gold mines in particular here now. Yes. But it has been different employers, because the 1987 strike shook the industry. So it wasn't about a particular mine. It was different mines that were employed. It was a nationwide cut-across strike. So we never in any situation where there were dismissals took money on behalf of our employees. We would engage one another, we would go through the statutory dispute mechanisms, we would win some cases, we would lose some cases. That was part of transforming the labor legislative challenges that there were. So I'm not understanding the question as to what have we done in terms of ensuring that these people get compensated. Whether it is about compensation or the 87 strike, you see, the reality of the matter is that the problem with
with these mushrooming structures is that they would mobilize you around one issue. And then if they see, but no, we're losing on this one, they would then mobilize you on another issue. Just to keep the momentum going, to make them look important. We really don't know, but our take on the matter of the ex-mine workers was basically about those who have been affected by occupational exposure and those who contracted silicosis. That was our concentration. We are not aware of any involvement from ourselves about those that are claiming, because as Fred Corbett had earlier stated, when they went to union buildings, never in any of those processes were we involved. They did not even come to the NUM offices to attempt to engage us on the matter of ex-mine workers. So our take on this matter and our understanding of our involvement here goes much broader, not because they raised the plight or raised the consciousness. Ours was more in relation to those who contract occupational diseases and our responsibility as a trade union movement, because the challenges of yesterday are the challenges of tomorrow. It remains the same thing. So that's how we get involved, or got involved and started engaging the chamber on this matter. We don't have, they say that they were former members. It's not been tested how many of them are members, because none of them came to the NUM. Not even those leading them came to the NUM and said, we can prove to you that these were our members, or do you have proof that these are ex-members of ours? That's why we don't refer to them as former members of the NUM. We take this as an umbrella challenge and deal with it in terms of the plight of the ex-mine workers. And the challenges of silicosis. That is our campaign. It's part of the NUM's campaign. It has absolutely nothing to do with whether they were members or non-members. Because when we took on the asbestos challenge, it didn't have anything to do with members or non-members. It had everything to do with ex-mine workers and current mine workers and future mine workers that had contracted the disease. So therefore, as we take on this challenge, it is about the ex-mine workers. It has nothing to do on whether they were members or are members. Or look, it's going to be challenging to prove, because 87 is a long way away. It's going to be challenging to prove that they were or they were not members. To us, that debate is irrelevant. What is relevant is that if people were not compensated for contracting a disease, the NUM is the most representative trade union and has a moral and political responsibility to address that imbalance that took place. That is what we stand for.
Yeah. Chairperson, some of the members raised the matters that were responded to by the Department of Labor and the Department of Health. Firstly, you raised the matter of 50 million rand that was paid out. We don't have intimate details of this sum amount of money. What we know is that there was some 50 million rand transferred to the then Transkei government. What department there that was given that money to administer, we don't know. Secondly, is that, yes, indeed, we agree with the department that if people are found to have contracted occupational diseases, indeed, they can be compensated still, even 20 years after they have worked in the industry. I think as Comrade Bailey has illustrated, because indeed different diseases take different latency periods for them to manifest themselves. If you look at asbestosis, for example, you can leave the industry for 15 to 20 years before there's any sign and indication of you having contracted asbestos-related disease. Same thing with silicosis. And then so it goes. So, therefore, yes, when those people can then be medically declared that that they have these diseases which are associated with their occupation, by all means, as a union, we will assist them. But some of them don't necessarily need an assistance from the union, because the procedures are there within government that they can simply, you know, approach the Department of Health for the body called MBOD to certify their level of disability and indeed get compensated according to the regulations that have been set up. Because some of these diseases, occupational diseases, are scheduled within the laws in the country. So those that need the support, the assistance of the union, they come via the union. Those that they don't, they just go directly, being assisted by their own medical practitioners in terms of the submission of the claim documents. Because this does not need a sanction from their former union to can then make these claims. So I'm saying, yes, we agree with the department that they can still be compensated as long as they can show that indeed their disease is occupationally related and it can be traced back to the mining industry. The other matter, Honorable Chairperson, that relates to this issue of the 1987 strike and the monies that Comrade Bailey has reacted to, is that within the mining industry, we have a system which includes a body called DEBA, which is the recruitment agency of the industry. And in many instances, workers who come from outside of the mine towns, they enter into an arrangement of even how would they send money back home, be it they are from the rural areas within the country, be it they are from within the subject region, Lesotho, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and so forth. TEPA is a body that arranges those funds. They effect deductions from their salaries and send the money back home. And, you know, the families back home, they would then go to TEPA offices and draw this money. That was before even TEPA was converted into being a banking institution of some kind. Now, any monies, including pension funds, and also at the stage when we introduced provident funds, monies related to workers, the best bodies that would handle them would be TEPA, if an individual does not handle his own monies by itself. So at no stage, even after the 1987 strike, was there any money paid to anywhere, because whatever was due to those workers would have been paid to them through DEPA, if it was paid out. And also, although we don't know what monies were they referring to, because when you go into a strike action, particularly in those years, the principle of no work, no pay, which applies today, applied even then. It's better today, because if we followed the legal procedures, the strike becomes protected and people are saved from being dismissed. But those years, employer would give a notice, sometimes a 12-hour notice or sometimes a 24-hour notice, and workers are dismissed on the spot after having embarked on the strike. But also we must come back. The 1987 strike was not only labor-related. It was also politically motivated on the part of the employer, because the chamber at that time was in cahoots with the apartheid state, and all measures and means were done to fight workers not only on the basis of the labor-related matters, but also on the political front. Why do we say this? Workers during this strike action were turned against each other. Ethnicity, tribalism was used when they were set against each other. That was the tactic to break the strike. And when that violence began, when we realized that it is now fast getting out of hand, and it's no more now a fight between the employer and the employee, it's now turned into what was known by that time as black-on-black violence, which was induced deliberately by powers that be at that time. There was no difference in the 1987 strike. It was exactly the same pattern. The issue of them being transported was then a matter that was discussed between us and Tamer, that in order to prevent loss of life where workers would kill each other, then let's rather, because when you recruit them, you use them and you transport workers from their places of origin to your mines, then transport them back until the matter has been sorted out. So it was not NUM taking an initiative to basically transport them in order to do what? Because in our situation, we wanted the strike to be sustained, indeed, and workers to be there where the fight is, so that whilst the industry is losing production, but also workers are demonstrating in terms of the demands that were there at the time. So no monies whatsoever were paid to NUM, because indeed at that time, we were even not allowed as unions to handle funds that are coming from abroad that would have question marks. Our posts were inspected without us knowing. That is a known factor. The intelligence was used against the trade union movement. So therefore, this money, they must explain, you know, what money are they talking about that was paid to NUM after the 1987 strike. And that strike was not settled in a form of, say, here's the package settlement. It was broken. And the industry, we were informed intelligently that at the point they have taken a serious decision of actually, you know, terminating NUM, pushing it into oblivion as a trade union. So therefore, that's why we agreed to these mechanisms of passing workers back to their places of origin. So, honorable members, we want to clarify this so that you are left with no, a perception that there have been monies. As we have said up front, and as the situation is now, we don't handle monies except monies that we take from members through their subscription fees and monies that we would get from our fraternal organizations abroad. Individual workers' monies, they are transactions between those individuals and the institutions concerned, not via, you know, our coffers of any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gona, or Comrade Gona. I think I will, before I come back to my area of interest, of the contract, not the contract, the agreement that you have with the chamber, and the your intention to adopt an overarching approach in solving this umbrella challenge. Before we come to that, I think I should do something that is peculiar here because of parliamentary rules, and I think we're about to lose the Secretary to Parliament. But we wanted to hear from him, because some of these groupings made contact with him, with Parliament through him, and the committee was interested into a very short account on those interactions. So if we may suspend this for a short while, accommodate that presentation, and then we come back to this, so that we can go back to Parliament and tell them that we're still here dealing with the matter. Honourable members, can we just unpeculiarly take that, and our guests, you may drink water, we are coming back. Okay. Secretary, I think the floor is yours now. What is it that you can share with the committee? I'm sure you won't be intimidated by NUM, the Chamber, Labour, and all these people that are here. I can see he has brought his own job brass, you know. He can't be intimidated, you know. Okay, Secretary, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Chairperson, and good afternoon, members and officials of NUM. Hello, sir. I think that I can't be injured by any because I'm a worker too, indeed. So I think that I would feel more comfortable in their company. Just to say that this the first time that Parliament interacted officially so with the problem of the ex-mine workers was when they wrote a letter which they therefore had lodged as a petition to Parliament. And that letter was written to the office of the Speaker of the National Assembly. Unfortunately, it was not handled properly at that level by the official of the office of the Speaker. What they then did was to write to the Department of Labor to say that this is the complaint of people who are ex-mine workers. What is it that the Department of Labor can do to assist in this regard? And it was supposed to have been dealt with differently because petitions, there is a procedure of dealing with petitions in Parliament. And just before we went to Mizana on the 15th of September, we were therefore also confronted with a letter now written by Mr. Nomazele indicating that, look, we have lodged the complaint. We have not done anything about it as Parliament. We are not going to allow you to continue with your assembly until such time that you resolve our problems. I think the letter had actually even threatened that blood would be shed in Bizana. It seems like, we'll show you Wimbondos. This government must kill us in the land where Oliver Tambo was born, something like that. But then indeed, what I did, therefore, in consultation with the presiding officers and other political officers, was to speak to the Department of Labor, to speak to the presidency, who were involved when these ex-mine workers went to Pretoria, with a view to find out what is it exactly that they promised these people, because they were complaining now about promises made to them when they went to Pretoria. Incidentally, there was little that got out of those telephone discussions. But we'll agree that we must all converge in Bizana in order to be able to address this matter with these ex-mine workers, which we did indeed. And I must say that at the beginning, we thought that the mine, because we've been told that even by the Department of Labor, some of these people are troublesome people, they create problems. But indeed, I think our own reading, in those meetings was that there could be people who were problematic, but that there is indeed a genuine problem and suffering of these people, where they claim that during the strike they were taken back home with a view that when the strike action subsided, they'll come back home or indeed to receive their monies in respect of pension funds, etc., etc. But indeed they say that the money was given by the Chamber of Mines. This is their claim. But that money was transferred to the then TBVC state, or the homeland government. But with the advent of the new dispensation in the country in 1994, they claim that such monies therefore were taken over without having been transferred to them as individuals, were taken over by the new government. So their demand is that the new government must give to them money which rightfully belongs to them, which was given by the Chamber of Mines to these TBVC states. That's the main complaint. But the new government has therefore apparently in Victoria promised that they would investigate who amongst these people qualify to get that money. Because in discussion it appeared that there was an agreement that indeed there is such money, or there are such funds. But indeed what you need to do is to make sure that people get the funds, must be properly processed for purposes of who does qualify or doesn't qualify. And they had agreed therefore that once they are still investigating, Each one of those members would be given a voucher up to the tune of 800 rands per month. And this would be facilitated by the presidency and the Department of Labor. And the provincial government were involved in this regard. I know the provincial government of the Eastern Cape was involved in this thing, according to the meeting, because some of the, in the meeting that we had a representative of the government of the Eastern Cape and people from Labor Department. So in short, Chairperson, they say that of the 20,000, plus or 20,000 people who were said to be qualifying for these funds, after doing analysis, processing, it was found only 11,000 of those people qualified. Some of the people who claim this compensation or pension fund are people who are children of diseased ex-mine workers. Children and wives of diseased ex-mine workers. Who may not indeed, perhaps, some of whom may not have a genuine claim to the money. I don't know. So, but I think that the approach that the presiding officers had thought that would be looked at here is that we need to separate shepherds between those people who are seen to be troublemakers and those people who are genuinely affected by this thing, who have a genuine claim, so that this matter should be processed and that these people should be assisted. And I think that one, because if indeed it is true that the current government took this money, it should be that this money should be still there, and if we have a list of people that have been processed and some of whom have been found to be qualifying, what is it that stops government to process the payments and pay these people to alleviate their hardship? I think this is the approach that the presiding officer had suggested, therefore, in view of the facts at hand, that this is the approach that we should take around this matter. And thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Colleague Secretary. I think you've answered the question I had, and it's the question that I was asking other stakeholders who came to make a presentation here. There are individuals in the whole process who are identified as troublemakers, and those individuals are playing a chameleon game. They came to us claiming to be ex-workers union, and we had to align them. We had to align them, saying that if you are ex-workers union, then we are not dealing with you. You must get out. Then they came back to say that, yeah, we're ex-mine workers union. Now we're asking other stakeholders, holders, how long are we going to be engaging with these people that we have identified? They were mentioned here. Yeah. They were mentioned by the earlier presentation. Yet we understand that some stakeholders, amongst these stakeholders, have got lists of beneficiaries. Some not qualifying, but some qualifying, which now brings it to the fact that there is a case. In the whole story, there's a case. Which means, therefore, someone somewhere has to ponder into the matter and deal with it once and for all. I don't know, members, whether you would want to interact with that presentation or we should relieve them and come back to the earlier interaction that we had with NUM. All right, Nkong.
No, Jefferson, in order for us to be in the right track, I'm not sure, because the speaker the secretary will leave now. There are two issues that needs to be resolved. Is money that was given by the chamber to the former Transkei government. That is the one. The second issue is the 1987 strike. And these are two things which I think they need to be resolved. Because if we are going to talk about that money, it's 54 million and it's the one that is being dispersed to those people who qualify. So I think that should be issued. Because issues that the Senate plan is raising are issues that relate to the strike, not to the diseases that people had. So that is a conflict that we're finding ourselves in here when we're dealing with those people. So for me, these are two separate issues.
Okay. Comrade, the follow-up?
What you were requiring is not so much what the comrade is saying. What the comrade is saying is now analyzing what we must deal with. The chair wanted to know whether there is anything we want to ask or to interact with this portion which was given by the secretary. And I sincerely believe that there is really nothing we should, because it's just information, but we can then remain engaging on the questions that you have raised, comrade. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Dr. Baga, I wouldn't want to give you, because if you want to protect yourself now as a chamber, you had your bite yesterday. Just to point out to the secretary that the chamber never paid money to the DVB's place. That is the information that the secretary obtained from them, but the information that he obtained is incorrect. The chamber just paid it over to the old South African government, who apparently paid it to the DVB's place. Apologize?
Yes, Comrade Chair, let's not shoot the messenger. The secretary was under enormous pressure. You heard what he said, that Amampondo were after his blood in Mbizana. And he attended this meeting, and there was a lot of emotion, and we took some notes, and this is what was conveyed. We didn't, and we are not here to verify what was said. That's why Parliament set up an ad hoc committee. You will do the verification. But I think a chairperson, and I must commend the input I got to the tail end from the comrades from NUM. I think really they've crystallized the issues. But I think on your list of people that you maybe need to hear from, this is a recommendation, the decision is yours, maybe TEPA needs to come and answer some of these questions. Because you see, there is an allegation that after particular court cases, despite what Dr. Bakre is saying, there is an allegation on the ground that monies were paid via, as Secretary reported, and the allegation that NUM is involved in some of those monies and the disbursement of monies, when we all know that maybe it was via TEPA, but I think we need to clarify that particular issue because it is on the table. And it did come up in that meeting. But I must also say, Chairperson, that we also just wanted the committee to also get a sense from Mr. Mansoura, because I think your timelines are the 20th of November to report around some of the issues. Maybe Mr. Mansoura, in just a minute or two, can just quickly before we leave, just provide that information so that the committee is also informed as to where you need to go next week.
Okay.
Just briefly. I think it's important that the House knows where the process is going, because the committee is moving. Now, the last time the committee asked for an extension, it was just a motion over the paper. I would suggest that it might be time for the committee to submit an interim report to the House and report progress on the matter, so the House is fully aware of what's happening. And they can just give an indication of the process that the committee is following. They can highlight the challenges, and then they can ask for the extension to the time they think they need to complete.
Thank you very much. It's a very good legal advice, I must say. It's a very good legal advice, but members of the committee will decide on that legal advice. Thank you very much. You may leave if you so wish. Now you can take your. Let's come back. This member is asking a follow-up question, so he's going to leave. But it doesn't spoil the process. I just wanted to check, coming back to Noom. I heard you saying that in the entire, in the whole quagmire, there are those people who qualify. Definitely you will be picking them up in this corner, in that corner, and in that corner. We heard that from the chamber yesterday. Secondly, you said that there's an agreement with chamber as to how you should be dealing with the situation. We heard it from you. And I think we will agree with you on the basis of the presentations that were made to the committee, that some people have already been compensated and some have not been. We will agree with you on that one. And also, we would take the assertion that the challenge here, this is an umbrella challenge, and we take on what you are saying that you would be adopting an overarching kind of an approach, which is not saying this one was a member, this one was not a member, as long as this person is affected from having worked in the mine. You will, as an organization, assist in a process of investigating compensation for those people. Can you therefore, on the basis of what I've mentioned, having come from you, can you map out the process? What does that mean, in your view? The fact that there's a case in this matter, there are people that need to be compensated, they are so, one would say, these people cannot be easily traced. It's difficult to trace them. You've got an agreement with the chamber as to how you should be dealing with matter, which is very, very assisting for the committee. And also you accept the matter, the fact that the matter is so complex that it would not need to be dealt in a piecemeal, where you would say, you are my member, you are not my member, and therefore we cannot be dealing with you. Those kinds of assertions are assisting the process of the committee. But please, crystallize them. What do they mean? And the last one would be, you've just been to the minerals and energy. Where do you place it in the whole story? Where would you place the Department of Minerals and Energy? We've met with health, we've met with labor, but fortunately you've met with minerals and energy. Where do you place them in the whole puzzle? We are looking for solutions now. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Let me first clarify this. The agreement that we have with Chamber, first and foremost, is about exposure to an occupational disease. Right. It has absolutely nothing. Let me first put it in the right context. It has nothing to do with the statutory compensation and the restructure. Absolutely. This is over and above what the statutory structures must give, that we are looking in engaging to say, once we have an idea of how many people we are referring to, then it will either be through litigation or it will be through consensus that we say, compensate these people, because it is through your negligence that they have been exposed and your safety practices in the industry. So it has nothing to do with the statutory. I thought it's just important that that one raises this. Now, in the process of setting up health facilities that can assist, we can also do data tracking to give us an indication of how many people. It won't give us an exact figure, but it will give us an indication of, look, because these people have registered at this clinic, those people, because we are also checking up the existing facilities. These people have registered for treatment here, and therefore it is easy to then track these people. It is within that context that we have agreed to go that route. Yes, I agree with you, Chairperson. It is a very, very complex situation. We have never attempted as the NUM to discriminate when people have been affected by the safety measures, whether you were a member or you weren't a member, because it's just going to complicate the situation. When they're suffering, we have that responsibility to ensure that we ease the burden on those who are experiencing that suffering, whether they were members or not. We have this thing in the NUM that says, if members were not members, it's because of our own weaknesses that they were not members, because we have a responsibility to recruit them. So therefore, we then take responsibility as though they are our members. Where we place the Department of Minerals and Energy, stringent legislation. They need to come up with mechanisms that will ensure that legislation is of such a nature that if people get dismissed and we find later that these people have been exposed to occupational diseases or whatever the case may be, then the industry must take full responsibility and accountability for the tracing, for the problems that arise, and also for the compensation thereof. It is within that ambit that we see the role of the Department of Minerals and Energy.
From now onwards, eh?
Yes, into the future.
Okay. Members, the last round. Let me give you, comrade.
Thank you, comrades, for coming to talk to us. And I arrived a little bit later, coming from another committee. But what I want to check with you is whether, when we now reach the stage where we now to go into nitty-gritty, sifting those who are qualified, whether, as you say, as NUM, you will be willing to work with us right through, so that we can also tap into your knowledge, because you have more knowledge about the industry. So we will need you when we start tracing these people. The chamber have also told us that they will assist, but we do need people who are practitioners there, who can be able to see the other loopholes that we might get. It's a long time we have been in practice. So that's what I'm asking, whether you would be willing to do that.
So in other words, what you are saying, comrades, is that in the written presentation that will follow this verbal one, please assist us with recommendations that will take us out of this problem. Or any suggestion that you might have that we should take to Parliament. It doesn't mean we'll take them, eh? It doesn't mean we'll take them.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think NUM may be able to help. NUM, I'm sure they can help us in this. But one report we had that these occupational diseases, such as tuberculosis and that, doctors can ascertain whether they're contracted at the mine or they are not. And so the complaint was, is that after a couple of years, one of the mine workers is ill, and they go to the doctor, they get a certificate, and they go back and they go try and say, well, I contracted this at while I was working, and they are disqualified. Is that true or not?
Thank you, Chairperson. Comrade, you just said the payments were without discrimination. In the document that we have from the ex-mine workers, there's a paragraph there which says there were a group of people who died in KwaZulu-Natal. None of them were paid to date. But the payment of the people, this amount of 1,150 was made by noon.
1,150 rand. Yes, paid only the, they only paid the members of NUM.
Okay, thank you. I think that was
well, well observed. I think NUM is getting one thing we went.
Never involved in. We never paid anyone, never involved in money exchange.
No, Chairperson, you see, that one thing I won't do. Look, there has been a decision that was taken by our Congress at some stage, which said, look, man, as the NUM, because this is becoming a competitive environment, what do we do in terms of assisting our members in funeral contributions? And we took a resolution and we said, let's give them 2,500 rand. We then revised that decision last year because it has become too expensive for us. At no stage, if NUM has given money to people, then it would have been money taken from the NUM coffers as a grant to say, look, we are assisting you in your plight. This is what we can contribute. But never have we taken any money from any institution on behalf of members. We just don't do that. Because money is the cause of all evil. And our experience, nobody can accuse the NUM of ever taking money on behalf of anybody, because once we have an agreement, we set up a trust and we stand back and allow trustees to run with it. For the mere fact that we know money creates problems and we don't want to get involved in that. The NUM is more than willing, and we will also in our written submission say that we are more than willing to assist where our expertise and our manpower is required from the portfolio committee. We will help wherever we can and assist you. Because it's our responsibility. Resolving this matter is in the best interest of society at large. Not only in the interest of the NUM or in the interest of... It's in the best interest of society at large. What did I not answer? The question of the illnesses, yes, there is a way. It's, well, any occupationally contracted disease, if a person dies and has contracted a disease, even prior to him dying, he could have left the industry 5 years or 10 years later. They find that there's an occupational disease. There are experts in that field that will be able to examine and say, but this is linked to his period there, because the particles that are released, especially in silicosis, is unique to the gold mine, you see? So they'll be able to pick that up, the occupation. Yeah, with TB is different, but in terms of silicosis, they will be able to do that. With TB, you would find that there would be differences of opinion. A doctor would then say, no, but it could be in his period there. But it's difficult to say, how do you say that TB has been picked up there, because if it's years thereafter. It's quite a very, very complicated situation. I don't think there is science that can assist us in that.
Suffice to say, Chairperson, that even on TB, when you look at the diseases that are caused by silica, TB is one of those, because of the exposure to dust. There is work that has been done by occupational doctors. One of those is Dr. Sophie Kisting, who has worked in the mining industry. And unfortunately now she's in Geneva, in ILO. But her records are still with the Department of Community Health here in the University of Cape Town. It proved clear, let alone, you know, the debate that is there. Because also what informs some of the medical practitioners, it is from what angle do they come? Do they come from the angle of the employer? Or do they come from the angle of society in general and therefore be sympathetic to society and safeguard their own practice in that form? So there is literature that then talks to that matter of silica also linked to tuberculosis.
Just come in there, Chairperson. Comrade Fred is absolutely correct. That is only if you have an existing occupational disease coupled with tuberculosis. If it's coupled with that, it's difficult because tuberculosis is curable first and foremost. Now, if people have left the industry in the Eastern Cape, if they have left the industry in 87, for example, it's going to be difficult if they have TB now to say, but it's because of your relationship with the mining industry. It is against that backdrop that I'm answering the question. But in relation to the fact that if somebody contracts tuberculosis coupled with an occupational disease, much easier to prove.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much to our guests. I think I must make this mention that we called you not because you are a guilty party, but because you are a stakeholder that can assist us in resolving this problem. So we are looking for a solution. That is why Parliament, through this other committee, called on you. So please feel free to assist us whenever it is possible. We want to make a recommendation to Parliament, a recommendation that will suggest the manner in which this problem could be solved. And the institutions, the department that should assist governments in resolving this matter, that is the business of this committee. That is why you were called to come and make this presentation. So you mustn't leave here thinking that we called you because you are guilty or you are we must thank you as a committee, and we're looking forward in your assistance, especially the input that we have requested from you. Thank you very much again.
In order for us to be effective in drafting recommendations that indeed will remain recommendations until you take decisions on if there were any submissions made which trace the problem from the point of view of those that complained, so that we can then, coupled with our knowledge of the developments, we can then suggest, you know, concrete steps that Parliament should look into in terms of resolving the matter. But now with piecemeal information that we pick up from the line of questions, we may not be enabled properly to then draft a formidable, you know, recommendation to you. Thank you.
Okay. Chairperson, I think it would be very, very rude of the NUM if we leave without saying thank you for having us, because we always appreciate any opportunity where we can make a difference in the lives of our members, not only the mine workers, but also the lives of society at large, because sometimes we tend to think it's workers' issue, but it has political implications. And societal implications if we don't act on them in the workplace. So therefore, thank you very much for the opportunity. We have never, when we were summoned by the government to come to Parliament,
never felt guilty or felt that we are being threatened. It has always been a privilege for us to assist wherever we can. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Also to check, is the time frame in terms of submitting the recommendations, the deadline or something like that?
There is. 22nd, we need to... 22nd, we need to be giving a report to Parliament. But synthesizing the report that we're going to be taping to Parliament should be before that. That is why we're saying you cannot come next week. That's why the Secretary was adamant that come this week, so that your input can enrich the recommendations that we will be making to Parliament. Whether it's going to be as suggested by the gentleman there, the legal advice that we're getting, the committee will see. But next week is the deadline. Yeah. It would be through the Member of Parliament that they would extend the what's name as the our request, if we so request. Yeah. Members, you'll remain for a minute, eh? I won't keep you, it will be a minute.
Thank you very much. Why should you leave? When I say members should remain, why should you leave?
Because we're not a member.
Okay. No. You just have to understand
your name again?
Colleague. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much, Comrade Fred. Yeah. Members. That is where we are now. Our last intention was to call who? These were.
We had contemplated calling the board. Yesterday we were talking about calling the board.
The Provident Fund. Provident Fund. Now there is Provident Fund and DEBA. Yeah. Why don't we call them very early next week then? Yes, same day. Yeah. And then we call them, if say for instance, how's Monday? I know it's constituency work, but Monday would assist us in dealing with the two presentations and also deliberating as a committee on the what's name on the business as a whole, trying to prepare that report that needs to be. It's not going to be discussing the report, but trying to prepare to assist the preparation of the report. How would that be, members? Monday, yeah? Hmm? 1 o'clock. Well, why don't we meet? Would it be texting for us to meet Monday, 2 o'clock? 2 to 5? Yeah. I think let us do that. Let's meet at 2, and then we adjourn at 5. Okay, thank you very much, members. The business of the committee is adjourned.